Well, a new book came out several years ago by Scott and Bethany Palmer. It's called The Five Money Personalities. Now, it was written specifically for couples, helping them to relate to one another in a healthy way when it comes to finances. See, money problems can be funny on a video like we just watched, but in real life, not so funny. I read not long ago that the number two cause of divorce in America is infidelity, and the number one cause of divorce is conflict over money. Whether it's overspending, poor planning, lack of communication, the list goes on and on. And the Palmers said that often it's not the big things when it comes to money, it's the day-to-day little things that impact what they call our money relationship. Do you grab a latte on the go, or do you have a cup of joe at home, they ask? Do you eat lunch out, or do you brown bag it? Do you take neighborhood walks to stay in shape, or do you join a full-service gym? They said that these kinds of decisions can oftentimes undermine a relationship. People don't see eye to eye, and the day-to-day little things just add up and cause a lot of pain over time. Here are the five money personalities they talk about in their book. They're spenders, they're savers, security seekers, risk takers, and flyers. Now, spenders, as you might imagine, would shop till they drop. That's kind of their philosophy. Savers know that the best way to double your money is to fold it in half and stick it back in your wallet. Risk takers figure nothing ventured, nothing gained. Security seekers kind of think long term. They're thinking about saving for retirement. They're maybe saving for a rainy day. And then you have the flyers who just really don't care much about money at all. Now, according to the online survey that I took several years ago, I am a spender flyer. Okay? As a spender, I kind of live in the moment and I enjoy spending money. I like to buy gifts for people. I'm kind of willing to spend money on conveniences. As a flyer, I just don't worry a lot about money. I'm fine with other people making the money decisions. That's not the most important thing to me. I'm not motivated by money. I mean, come on, I got something going for me, according to the survey. And I think relationships are more important than money. So there. But anyway, okay, that's me. Gail took the survey again several years ago. She's a saver security seeker. All right, as a saver, she rarely spends impulsively, she loves getting a great deal, and she's willing to hunt for a bargain. As a security seeker, she likes to have a plan, be prepared, and is willing to sacrifice now for future stability. So as you are now well aware, the reason we are not in the poorhouse is because of Kale and not because of me. Now, we may not be rolling in cash, but we don't have overwhelming debt either, and it's largely because of her. Now, we've gone through some lean years. We never had to sacrifice like our grandparents did during the Depression. We don't have to wonder where the next meal is coming from. We never had to do that like some friends that we have in India and in Ukraine. But we understand what it means to live frugally, and we've gone through some pretty tight times in the past. I'm telling you, I will not eat tuna casserole anymore because we ate a bunch of it when we first got married because it was cheap. For years, we just didn't eat out. We didn't buy movie tickets. We didn't do anything fun that cost money. We had lots of fun. It was just free fun. And that was the way it was. Now, we're not as tight as we used to be, but it's largely because Gail has been really wise at helping us with this. Now, not everybody's married to Gail, which is good because that would be creepy. But not everybody has somebody like Gail in their lives, you know, who's kind of keeping them on track this way. So what that means is there are a lot of people in our culture today who are in real trouble when it comes to finances. And so as we wrap up this series, some of you are thinking, I thought it would never end. I've been talking about money forever. This is our fifth and final week in the Passing Go series, What to Do with What You Get. And we can't really finish talking about what to do with what you get if we don't talk about what to do about all the stuff you want to get but you can't afford to get. And there's a reality about that too. Some people discipline themselves to not overspend, like we talked about a few weeks ago, and other people just kind of pay on credit, borrow now, pay later, just go into debt, no big deal. But I would suggest to you, again, as we wrap this up, that the greatest threat to financial security and maybe to peace of mind in general may very well be this trap, the trap of debt. While most people are going to have to incur debt at some point to buy a house and maybe even a car, too many of us see this ever-increasing load of consumer debt as just kind of a natural requirement to live the American dream. But is that healthy? I mean, is it really appropriate? Or is it possible that we could dig ourselves out of debt and that really we could cultivate the discipline to stay out? We're going to see that the Bible, God's Word, has a lot to say about this in a really, really practical way. Maybe you've seen the bumper sticker that says, I owe, so off to work I go. Have you seen that? Maybe you have it on your car, or maybe you have it on the bank's car that they're letting you drive. But the implication is that you're paying, or you're working today to pay for money that you spent yesterday. And that's kind of the attitude, the prevailing norm of our culture. It says that spending money before we earn it is normal. Right? And we hear that all the time. I heard about a woman who went to look at a new freezer, and she said to the salesman, look, we just can't afford this freezer. He said, oh, you can. You can afford it. All you have to do is buy in bulk, and you're going to save so much money that you're going to pay for this freezer. You're just going to see. And she said, we're already paying for a car with the money we're saving on bus fare, and we're paying for a washing machine with the money we save not going to the laundromat. I just don't think we can afford to save any more money right now. And you know, some of us can relate to that. A whole lot of us cannot afford to save money that way, right? In 2017, I did a bunch of research on this, and I looked at lots of different websites, and I got different numbers everywhere, but they all sort of came down to this seemed like a pretty fair guesstimate, that the average credit card debt per household last year in America, $8,158. And that's averaging so many people who don't have debt at all on credit card. The average interest rate on credit cards last year, 14.9%. Interest on credit cards. That is horrible. Horrible. At the end of last year, the average American household carried debt, or that carried debt, the debt was over $131,000. According to CBS News, the average American dies nearly $62,000 in debt. Back when we lived in Louisville years ago, we've kind of lived there a couple times. When we lived there years ago, a local bank shared these statistics. I've held on to this, and keep in mind this was 25 years ago, but as debt has continued to escalate, it's hard for me to believe that it would be a lot different today. This particular bank published without any names. They said they reviewed 125 applications for home loans. They discovered that 90%, 9 out of 10 of those applicants had a minimum of 4 credit cards, and 3 of them were maxed out. 80% of the applicants had 2 car payments. 70% of them showed some late payments on their credit report. 1/3 of the young adults that applied for a new home loan had overdrawn on their checking account within the last 90 days. Apparently, they were living by the principle, I can't be overdrawn, I still have checks. So, you know, society says debt is normal. Debt's no big deal. Get what you want, have it now, pay for it later. I have a friend who got a letter in the mail from a bank that said this. With a straight face, with our new consolidation loan, you can borrow enough money to get out of debt. You can borrow enough money to get out of debt. Do you realize how messed up that is? Sometimes debt is inevitable. I understand. Maybe there's been some crisis that came into your life and it was unavoidable. Maybe your spouse abandoned you and you're in crisis mode right now. Maybe you're going into debt to put food on the table. No matter how tough things are, I think there are some choices that we can make, some things that we can do that will help us overcome or at least navigate this trap that's all too common. The Bible suggests that debt that results from careless spending is not just unwise, it's incredibly harmful. And so I want to show you some things about the nature of debt itself. Then we're going to look at a parable. We're going to look at some different scriptures and see if we can learn some things together. Proverbs 22:7 says, the borrower is servant to the lender. When we go into debt, we're allowing somebody else to own a piece of us. When debt gets out of control, we're actually in bondage to our creditors. Rick Warren said, or he offered kind of 3 reasons why we're often tempted to go into debt. He said, for one thing, we think more stuff will make us more happy. Whether it's accumulating money itself or the things that money can buy, we live in a culture that says that stuff equals happiness. That's the message of virtually every commercial that you're going to watch at the Super Bowl today. If you're not happy, it's because you don't have enough stuff. And yet Ecclesiastes 5:10 says, whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. It's about our priorities, and it's a vicious cycle that can bite us if we're caught in the trap that stuff's going to make us happy. Now, another thing Rick Warren said is that we think having more stuff makes us more important. And yet Jesus said in Luke 12:15, real life is not measured by how much we own. Somebody said one time that if you struggle with this whole thing of keeping up with the Joneses, you know, and making sure you have more stuff than your neighbors, what you need to do is go home today, go out on the front porch or the back deck and just shout as loud as you can, you win. You have a cooler car than I do. You have a better yard than I do. Your house is nicer than my house. I give up. I quit. I'm done with this ridiculous competition. Our possessions, listen, our possessions do not determine our value. Our net worth, Rick Warren says, our net worth has nothing to do with our self-worth. Now further, he said, we think having more stuff will make us more secure. But I think most of us have figured out, especially in the last 15 or 20 years, how seriously messed up that reasoning is. Everything material in life is vulnerable. From 9/11 back in 2001, how quickly things change. 2008, the recession then, just the obscene national debt that we're facing today. Money does not make us more secure. It can't. Proverbs 11:28 says, trust in your money and down you go. But the godly flourish like leaves in spring. You know, a lot of people learn the hard way that wealth and security do not go hand in hand. So let me ask you this. Why is debt itself so dangerous? Well, you know, Jesus told a parable. He told several parables that dealt with money in some way. He told one about an unmerciful servant. And the parable was specifically intended to teach a message about forgiveness. And we're going to dig into that a little bit more on Wednesday night. But there are some clear reminders in this parable that Jesus told about the enslaving nature of debt. You remember the story? It's found in Matthew chapter 18. It begins in verse 23. Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And as he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. Now you need to understand that Jesus was using exaggeration here. We learned several weeks ago that a talent was equal to about 20 years' wages. So 10,000 talents was literally tons of money, tons of silver and gold. When he said a servant owed that much money, everybody laughed. A country couldn't owe that much money. Actually, I think we owe that much money. But in general, Jesus was just using wild exaggeration. He's making the point. This guy is in over his head. He is desperate. Can you imagine the pressure he felt because of this debt? Every time somebody called his name in the street, he flinched because he was afraid somebody was after him. Every time the phone rang, you know, he jumped because he was afraid it was some creditor who wanted something out of him. He lived with this constant dread that the master was going to call and settle accounts, and he knew that he just could not possibly pay back the debt that he owed. And listen, when we plunge ourselves deeper and deeper into debt like that, the pressure builds up to try to repay it. And so people get new credit cards to pay off older credit cards. They do consolidation loans to pay off other loans. And the shoulders get stooped, and the backs get bent, and the nerves get shot because we're trying to juggle so much, and it's just exhausting. Jesus also kind of showed us that debt itself can hurt relationships. If you remember the story in this parable, the king calls this servant in, demands that he pay back the debt. And the servant can't, but he throws himself down before the king and he begs for mercy. And miraculously, this king forgave the whole debt. He didn't just say, I'll give you more time. He said, it's forgiven. Now, this is a parable. This is a made-up story. This is probably not going to happen with your Visa card representative. Okay, I'm just kind of giving you a heads up about debt. But notice, as soon as this servant left the throne room, in verse 28, what did he do? It says, when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii, and he grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. Now, 100 denarii wasn't nothing. It was 100 days' wages, about 4 months' salary. But he had just been forgiven billions of dollars. Why couldn't he show some mercy? Well, I think there's something here in this that it is messy when we lend money to people. I'm not saying don't lend money to your friends. What I'm suggesting is if you lend money to people, you ought to look at it as a gift. If they pay you back, it's a blessing. But I'm just telling you, it can really get messy when there are strings attached. This guy ultimately didn't just damage friendships. He lost everything. Verse 32, the master called that servant back in. "You wicked servant," he said. "I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?" In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all that he owed. See, the first time he went before the king, he got mercy. But the second time, he got justice. And I'm telling you, creditors today, most of them demand justice. Having a car repossessed or a foreclosure on a house, maybe even a lawsuit where you have to liquidate assets. That sounds so extreme, but I'm telling you, debt can become a trap that can take you there in a hurry. So what do we do? If you're in debt, how can you begin to get out of debt? Well, the Bible gives us some insight into that. In the Old Testament book of 2 Kings, there's a story about a widow who was facing this desperate situation. Poverty was on her. Her creditors were going to enslave her sons. And God miraculously provided an abundance of olive oil for her, and she was able to pay her debts and get out of debt. But Elisha gave her this piece of advice or direction in 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 7. He said, "Go sell the oil and pay your debts, then you and your sons can live on what's left." Now, the story itself is a powerful story about faith and about God providing, but I just want you to notice Elisha's advice. Pay your debts, live on what's left. Huh. What a concept. The Bible says we are to repay our debts. Psalm 37:21 says, "The wicked borrow and never repay." The right thing to do is to pay our debts. Now, if you're struggling with consumer debt, what can you do? Let me make some suggestions. Okay, and this is not all original to me. I've got people a lot smarter than me building into me on some of this. The first thing is establish a budget and live by it. Okay, I floated this balloon a few weeks ago, I know, but we just have to define where the money's going and establish some kind of budget that's going to help us live within our means. If you're deep in debt, you're going to have to cut out everything except the basic necessities. I mean, shelter and food. You know, I mean, things like cable TV and fast food and movie tickets and new clothes. Stuff has to wait, right? Desperate times call for desperate measures. Rick Warren says that a budget is nothing more than a spending diet. And let's be honest, we know when a diet is most necessary, right? And when we're really out of control with our spending, the spending diet needs to be pretty extreme. Now, incidentally, I hope this goes without saying, but let me just throw it in there. If you're trying to get out of debt, you can't keep taking on new debt. Kind of like the guy in the video, right? Oh, I'm in debt, so let's just go to Australia, and then I'll see you at the car store. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. If we're going to tackle some of this stuff to really try to get out of debt, we can't keep racking up bills in the process. Now, so make a budget. The second just little tidbit suggestion is pay off your car and then keep it. Okay, I'm not saying that you can never get a newer car, but you don't have to have a car loan for the rest of your life. Right? You could actually pay off a car and then keep it. You probably don't need a new car every 2 or 3 years. Have you seen that bumper sticker that says, "Don't laugh, it's paid for"? You know, get one of those bumper stickers. Maybe your bumper fell off. Just put it somewhere on the back of your car. The reality is the vehicle you have is probably the cheapest car you can own. You say, you don't understand. It cost me $300 last month to fix this thing, and now it's going to cost me $500 more to fix it this time. And you know what? That $800 is about 2 months of a 60-month car payment on a new car. So just be aware that probably often the cheapest car you can drive is the one that you have. Now, third suggestion. If you're dealing with a lot of debt, pay off debts with the smallest balance first. Okay, Dave Ramsey, who's kind of a financial expert Christian guy, he calls this the debt snowball. He said, now some people recommend that you pay off the debt with the highest interest rate first, and that may be the best thing for you. I'm not going to get into all those fine details. But the reality is when you pay off the smallest debts first, you have the satisfaction of getting rid of things, and psychologically that kind of builds confidence, and you get rid of one, and then you work on the next one. And you pay a little bit on everything, but then when you're finished paying on the one, you don't get to say, oh, now I get to start spending that. Then you roll that into the next one. Let me show you how this works just in a real practical way. Let's say that on top of your mortgage and maybe a car payment, you owe $1,000 in hospital bills, $2,000 in credit card bills and $10,000 in student loans. To keep it simple, we're going to say that the minimum payment on these three bills is $100 for each of them. Okay, so $300 in monthly payments. If you could discipline yourself to pay an additional $100 per month toward debt reduction, you'd pay $200 to the hospital instead of $100, and you'd pay $100 toward credit card and $100 toward student loans. In 5 months, you would pay off the hospital bill. You have the satisfaction of tearing that one up. Then the next month, you send that $200 plus the other $100 to the hospital, or excuse me, to the credit card company, and then you would eliminate that debt pretty quickly. And then when that debt's paid off, then you would take that $300, add it to the $100 at the bottom, and then you're down to one left. Does that make sense? Are you guys with me? All right, $10,000 student loan would be erased, $400 a month if you do it that way. This is it's called a debt snowball, and it builds as you get rid of debts. You got to have a strict budget, and if you work toward debt reduction, then you can get things paid off. Now, all right, maybe some of you are already ready to pass out on me, but I'm going to give you one more thing. I read this. I couldn't believe it, but this kind of makes my head spin, and maybe you too, but here we go. Let's say that you have $7,200 of credit card debt, and you're paying 18% interest. You say, that's crazy. Nobody do that. There are lots of people doing that. Let's say that you pay the minimum payment per month, which is 2%. That'd be $144. If you don't put anything else on that card, you've torn the card up, it's going to take you 30 years to pay back that loan, and you're going to end up spending about $23,000 to pay off that credit card. Okay, at the minimum 2% payment. Now, if you decided that you could put an extra $100 a month on that $144, you pay $244 per month, you'd pay off the loan in 3 years, and it would cost you $9,500. So 30 years, $23,000, or 3 years, $9,500. Which of those sounds better to you? I'm not good at finances, but I got that one figured out. You know, if doctor bills or, you know, other kind of loans are just so overwhelming you don't know what to do, what I'm going to suggest to you is figure out how much you can pay and then get on the phone. Talk to the doctor's office, talk to the hospital, talk to the bank, because those guys, if they're getting something from you monthly, would rather get something than have you file for bankruptcy. But we have a responsibility to pay our debts. Now, here's a fourth suggestion. Speak to a financial counselor. Okay, some people are better at handling finances than others. I've already told you I'm not great at this. I got to thinking I should be a financial counselor only if I don't make it into the NBA and I never get to ride in the Kentucky Derby. So financial counselor, and I'll do anything for a laugh. So yeah, that's me in dream jobs. But I was talking. sorry. I just like to play with that sometimes. I was preaching at a church up in Indiana. And I worked out a deal with our church accountant there. I said, look, you prepare a financial report for the congregation. You show it to me. If I can understand it, anybody can understand it. And then we'll kind of release it then to the congregation. I go into a room, the financial IQ goes down. I mean, I get that. I can admit that. But I don't have credit card debt, so back off. I'm just saying, okay. You know, I'm not the guy to help you much more than what I'm telling you now. But there are people who can help you. Okay, and you need to be smart enough and humble enough to get some help. Okay, consumercredit.com is at least a place to start. If you've never talked to one before, you can go online, look them up. There's a phone number. I printed that in your bulletin. So if you want to do it, but you want your wife to see you writing down the numbers, it's already printed there for you. Stick it in your pocket. You can look it up later when she's not watching. Get some help. Okay. Debt will bury you if you don't get on top of it. Now, the last thing for getting out of debt is to downsize your lifestyle. When my daughter Mackenzie was in fourth grade, they had this thing at school where you would read books and you get points. And then with your points, they had an auction and you could buy things with the points that you earned for reading books. And the way the auction worked is the kids would bring in and donate toys and games and things that they had at home. And then you get to buy them with what you had earned. Well, one of Mackenzie's friends had a pair of slippers, and she donated them to the auction. But when the auction was going on, she saw her slippers up there on the auction block, and she just couldn't stand it. So she bid on them, and she bought them back. You know, it's hard sometimes to let go of your stuff. It's just hard. But the reality is, sometimes we have to cut back And sometimes it gets pretty drastic. Maybe you need to have one car instead of two in your home for a while. Maybe you need to move into a smaller house. Maybe you have to sell some stuff to pay off some debts. And you say, oh, no, I couldn't bear to sell my house, or I couldn't imagine getting rid of a car. Well, would you rather lose the house? Would you rather have the car repossessed? Sometimes serious problems require serious solutions. And the Bible says we should pay our debts. You know, I shared this on Wednesday night in our Bible study time. When Gail and I had our first year of full-time ministry, we just did not really understand ministers' taxes are just kind of weird, and the whole full-time salary thing and quarterly payments and all that, and we just got burned at tax time, and we had to sell a truck to pay our taxes, and we had to go with one vehicle for a while, and that was hard, but it's never happened again because we learned some really, really important lessons during that time. Now listen, maybe you're saying, I wish this sermon would end. I am fine. This is not my problem. Okay, or maybe you're saying, you know what, we've been digging out of debt, we're almost there, everything's pretty good. Then if you want to stay out of debt, here's some really quick things, just hold on, we're almost done. Okay, first of all, pay as you go. Pay as you go. What that means is avoid credit cards as much as possible. Maybe you need a credit card when you travel, you say, I don't want to carry a lot of cash, or maybe you buy airline tickets or hotel stays and you need one, or maybe for emergencies, I mean, I get all that, but studies show that people spend more money on credit cards than they do when they spend cash. And now, and you know, we kind of do the credit card thing sometimes and get flight miles and all of that. That's kind of the argument. The reality is, though, that probably spend less money if you use cash. And if you use a credit card, here's the rules, okay? Here we go. If you use a credit card, it has to be for budgeted items, not for impulse buying, and you pay it off every month. And if you're not doing those two things, you need to cut up your card. You know what that's called? It's called plastic surgery. That's what it's called. Okay? Cut up the card. Because, I'm telling you, they love to give credit cards to young people. It is so easy to spend money on a credit card, and it's so much a trap. Okay, the second thing is to practice delayed gratification. Don't you just love delayed gratification? Aren't you glad you came today to talk about that? Basically, you don't buy it until you have the money to buy it. That sounds foreign to some of us, but we don't make the purchase till we have the money for it. Somebody said maturity is the ability to postpone pleasure. And so we learn to discipline by delaying a purchase until we have the money in hand. And then when it comes to staying out of debt, just refuse to get in over your head. You make a decision, I'm going to live within my means. Jesus told a story, another story in Luke 14, verse 28, he said, count the cost. Who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money, and then everyone would laugh at you. They'd say, there's that person who started that building and couldn't afford to finish it. Figure out what you can afford and then live there. Ecclesiastes 6:9 says, enjoy what you have rather than desiring what you don't have. Maybe it's a house, it's a car, maybe it's shopping for clothes. We have to learn the word enough and figure out what we're capable of handling. Listen, debt is a trap. It suck you in, chew you up, and spit you out. And so if financial accountability and responsibility is important to us, we've got to get this under control. And if it's not under control, please get some help, whether it's with a professional, you know, do something to get on top of this. Because here's the deal. It is nearly impossible to keep your priorities in line financially, spiritually, if this is out of control. I mean, seriously, if priorities are not in line because of finances, it's going to undermine what you're trying to do, not just financially, but spiritually. The Apostle Paul said something kind of interesting in Romans 13. He said this about debt in verse 8, let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. The only debt that you ought to never pay off and keep incurring more and more is the debt to love each other. And besides that one, he says, pay off all the other ones as quickly as possible. Don't let the debts remain outstanding. If you don't get control of your money is going to get control of you. That's the bottom line for today. It's kind of the bottom line for the whole series. All right, if you don't learn to control your money will end up controlling you. Listen, the things of this world are temporary. You know that. We all know that. It's just hard to live that way. Life is not defined by how much stuff we have. We know that. It's hard to live that way. Your net worth has nothing to do with your self-worth. We know that. Right? Going into debt to get more is going to rob us of the very contentment that we're after. We know that. It's just hard to live that way. I read a story about an American tourist who visited Poland not too long after World War II. And while he was touring there, he went into the home of this rabbi, and they were going to have a conversation. And he went inside, and he was kind of surprised that in this room, there were just some books, a table, and a chair, and that was all. And the guy said, "Rabbi, where's your furniture?" And he said to the tourist, "Where's yours?" And the tourist said, "Well, I don't have any furniture. I'm just visiting here." And the rabbi said, "So am I."